So many people unemployed, where are they getting their health insurance? From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Today, we get an update on how many people filed for unemployment for the first time over the past week. Conditions in this pandemic economy change so much more quickly than they have during other major economic crises. This is one of the more useful real-time indicators we have to understand what's going on. The number of people filing for unemployment has steadied over recent weeks, but it's staying pretty high, stubbornly high even. Almost 30 million people were on some form of unemployment at last count. And it's not just income these folks have lost. They are likely to lose health insurance, too. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
Denise Freeman says she lost her graphic design job at a hospital in Lawton, Oklahoma in June.
It was pretty stunning to be laid off.
And the 58-year-old lost her health insurance.
I'm a diabetic, and I was on like 14 different medications, and I had enough medications to last me maybe 2.5 weeks.
An estimated 12 million people have lost employer-sponsored health insurance during the pandemic, according to a new report from the Economic Policy Institute that includes family members of those who lost jobs.
The United States has chosen to really link health insurance coverage with employment.
Report co-author Ben Zipperer says when people are laid off, they can extend their coverage through COBRA. That can be expensive. Low-income people may qualify for Medicaid, but access varies by state. Denise Freeman was among those able to buy a subsidized plan on the health insurance exchange set up by the Affordable Care Act. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
In a letter to employees today, TikTok CEO Kevin Mayer said after just 2 months with the company, he's leaving. That is after the Trump administration in July accused the company of being a national security threat, gave it 90 days to be sold to an American firm or face a ban in the U.S. Mayer had come to TikTok from Disney, where he oversaw the successful launch of Disney Plus. The BBC's Karishma Vaswani explains what TikTok hoped to achieve with Mayer at the helm.
The company was aware of the fact that it was being seen by the Trump administration as a national security threat, that it was Chinese owned. And after the experience that the Chinese tech giant Huawei had had in the United States, I think that it was trying to find a way to smooth its operations. And it wanted to ensure that it was seen not just as a Chinese company, but as an American one. And the fact that Kevin Mayer had worked for Walt Disney, he was seen as this sort of global guy. He understood the way the United States worked, but also how to interact with CEOs and business operations out in China. I think all of that was seen as an advantage. I think it also is going to be quite interesting to see who might come on after him, because TikTok has got some pretty big challenges to face. A lot will depend, of course, on the politics in the United States as well, I think. But in the lead up to the elections in November, I think we should expect a lot more focus and scrutiny on Chinese companies like TikTok in the U.S. So whoever takes on that job, they've got their work cut out for them.
That was Karishma Vaswani with our editorial partner, the BBC. Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are also down in the 2-3% range, with the Dow future down 78 points, and the 10-year Treasury yield is at 0.683%. Let us take a moment to review the U.S.-China relationship. It is not good. The U.S. has blocked or restricted Chinese tech and infrastructure firms. Both countries have closed one another's consulates. And of course, don't forget about the tariffs that are still in place on hundreds of billions of dollars worth of goods traded between the two countries. Is this geopolitical tension making it hard for U.S. and Chinese companies to do business with one another? Our China correspondent Jennifer Pack wanted to find out.
Sunengwu supplies factories and data centers in China with water treatment equipment from the U.S. He says Chinese clients still welcome American products.
At a government cloud computing project in Jiangxi province, a client told me tensions between the U.S. and China are between national governments and don't affect our business.
But that gap between geopolitics and business is shrinking, says Kent Kettle with the consultancy group Control Risk in Shanghai. Even so, he says signs of tension between the U.S. and China, like closing each other's consulates, shouldn't cause businesses to panic.
Okay, so the question is, so what? So they close the consulate. How is that going to roll out and hit your business?
It all depends, he says. Chinese firms investing in the U.S. are at a disadvantage because of the anti-China mood.
Getting tough on China is the only bipartisan issue we have in Washington, D.C. right now.
But for American firms in China, more depends on which Chinese city they're in and what the local government there prioritizes.
You have to be looking at what's happening in your industry, in your sector, among other companies here, among your suppliers. What is happening to them? How is the regulatory environment being enforced on them?
Kettle says it's still a fantastic time to do business in China.
Companies are going to be hard-pressed to find any other market around the world that has the potential to grow as much in the next 20 years that China has.
Some sectors are doing better than others. Medical devices, biotech, and health foods are flourishing, for example. And it seems water treatment equipment too. Again, Chinese businessman Su Nangwu.
U.S. companies are very advanced in innovation and technology. When I search for water treatment equipment, nearly 7 out of 10 suppliers are American.
And, he says, finding an alternative to U.S. brands of the same quality is not easy. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.